What is peace brain? Peace brain is the synergistic connection between our mental and emotional bodies, blending the electrical power of the mind with the magnetic force of the heart. Listen and explore how to create unity worldwide as we blend science and metaphysics, open our hearts and minds to the possibilities of peace on Earth, and create the life we are each destined for. Featured guests range from angel communicators to zoologists and everything in between. Now here is your host, Dr. Gail Lash.
Hello and welcome to the Peace Brain Show. This is your host, Dr. Gail Lash, and I'm happy to have you here today. Today we have a very special program. I have Marjan Yavari, who's a friend of mine and a colleague in the Baha'i Faith, and we're going to be talking about social action and what that means and how we can create a better world, obviously a more peaceful world, through social action. And, of course, at the end of the show, we're going to have a transformative meditation, our peace brain meditation at the end. So stay tuned for that. I want to open the show with a quote, as I usually do. And this one is from the Universal House of Justice. And it goes, "The welfare of any segment of humanity is inextricably bound up with the welfare of the whole. Humanity's collective life suffers when any one group thinks of its own well-being in isolation from that of its neighbor, or pursues economic gain without regard for how the natural environment, which provides sustenance for all, is affected. A stubborn obstruction, then, stands in the way of meaningful social progress. Time and again, avarice and self-interest prevail at the expense of the common good. Unconscionable quantities of wealth are being amassed, and the instability this creates is made worse by how income and opportunity are spread so unevenly, both between nations and within nations. But it need not be so. However much such conditions are the outcome of history, they do not have to define the future. And even if current approaches to economic life satisfied humanity's stage of adolescence, they are certainly inadequate for its dawning age of maturity. There is no justification for continuing to perpetuate structures, rules, and systems that are manifestly fail to serve the interests of all peoples. The teachings of the faith leave no room for doubt that there is an inherent moral dimension to the generation, distribution, and utilization of wealth and resources." Wow, so let me pause for a moment. This is the Universal House of Justice is from the Baha'i Faith. It's the ruling body of the Baha'i Faith, and I want to talk about that for just a moment. But this paragraph, this quote, really has some amazing points, and I emphasized it, obviously, that these conditions are the outcome of history. Wow. I mean, I did my study in economics and policy of natural resources, and economics is all about, you know, the invisible hand and the market and getting the most you can, the most gain you can. But clearly the Universal House of Justice is here talking about that we have to throw out these outmoded ways of looking at our economics and our situation with the world, because it's not benefiting all people. So it really offers a glimpse into the new society, the civilization that will flourish in the future. So just think about that for a moment. I know it can be kind of scary to think about our whole system changing, but it really needs to become more just, obviously, to create peace on Earth. So we're going to be talking about social action that can be taken to help create this new ways of being in this show. But I do want to take a moment just to explain about the Universal House of Justice and its mindset and teachings that are central to our topic today of social action. So as you know, I'm all about peace. And of course, that's what the Peace Brain Show is about, is how we can, these different modalities of how we can work to create peace on Earth, actually in an active and concrete, practical way. So the Universal House of Justice is actually uniquely qualified to address the issue of world peace for several reasons. And I'm going to read you something that actually comes from the prelude to a document called The Promise of World Peace. And it says, the International House of Justice is an international governing body democratically elected by its representatives of the Baha'i Faith, whose more than 5 million members comprise one of the most diverse organizations on the earth. Recognized by scholars as one of the fastest growing, youngest, and most widespread of the world's religions, the Baha'i Faith has significant communities in over 230 different countries or significant territories, second only to Christianity, and represents over 2,000 tribes, races, or ethnic groups, and has translated its writings into over 800 languages for the use in 120,000 localities. Every 5 years, representatives of the national Baha'i communities gather at the Baha'i World Center, which is in Haifa, Israel, to elect the Universal House of Justice through a process which involves no nominations and no campaigning, only prayer and private ballots. Once elected, the Universal House of Justice is responsible for guiding and inspiring educational projects, charities, community development, radio stations, publications, and building projects for a community which circles the globe and includes people from every nation and culture imaginable. Guided by the global vision found in the writings of Baha'u'llah, the prophet founder of the Baha'i Faith, it has successfully forged a community which is a model of international cooperation and service. The goal is to promote peace and unity, not just for Baha'is, but for the whole entire world. So, in 1985, as I mentioned, there is this document, The Promise of World Peace. If you want to look it up, the Universal House of Justice wrote this message to the peoples of the world, inviting them to consider a new social order and how that could be fostered by all people by seeing themselves as a member of the universal family. So, with that, that's going to guide our discussion about social action today with my guest, Marjan Yavari. And let me just tell you a little bit about Marjan as I get ready to bring her on here. I'm delighted to have her as my guest. She is an entrepreneur, and I love that she's always open to the present time opportunities to be an angel investor, particularly to create environments for people to contribute their talents to create a better and more peaceful world. Her social action is based on the principles of the Baha'i Faith, particularly in the oneness of humanity. I invite you to go to Baha'iTeachings.org to learn more, and that's B-A-H-A-I, and then teachings, T-E-A-C-H-I-N-G-S.org, to learn more about the social action we're talking about the Baha'i Faith and its relationship to social action. And you can look up different current topics there. You can search the numerous articles and videos that are available there and find out more for yourself. So welcome, Marjan, to the Peace Brain Show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here and talk to you via this wonderful show.
So we're talking about social action, and before we get into that and give people, listeners, an example of you know, not only what you're doing in the world and what others are doing, but what they can do, obviously, in their own communities, you have an amazing, inspiring life story. It's pretty daunting, actually. it's always one that I love to hear. So I'd love for you to share some of those highlights with us, if you would, please.
Sure. I'll make it as quick as possible. But I was born in Iran, and when I was about 8 years old, and I was born also in a Baha'i family. But in 1979, we had the revolution, the Islamic Republic of the government changed, overthrew the Shah. And immediately after that, the persecution of the Baha'is began in Iran. And so our family was no different. It was subject to many hardships via the persecutions that the government purposely was trying to place on the Baha'i community. And so the war was happening in Iraq, and Iran war was happening, and also my father had lost his job because he was a Baha'i, and they were constantly asking anybody in the school system who is a Baha'i, and they will dismiss you from attending any kind of a public school. Well, there was no private school, but after the revolution. So I spent from fourth grade on until 1985, when I was in sixth grade, when we left Iran, was to constantly go from school to school trying to, you know, get an education. But after a month, they would ask, are you Muslim? And I would say no. And then the process would begin and trying to find another school. But in 1985, they came to our home to arrest my father and arrest myself and my mother. And we had to escape from roof to our neighbors' homes. And I have to mention that these neighbors were our Muslim brothers and sisters that allowed us and gave us a safe home to stay in until we found solutions to leave the country. And at that time, it was very common for smugglers to get people out through the borders. And so we spent about three nights and 4 days in the desert with camels and motorcycles and walking and all sorts of ways to get ourselves from Iran to Pakistan and cross the border without being killed or seen. And the journey was very difficult, and that's a whole different story on its own. But we made it to Pakistan, and the United Nations had established an office on the border town as the Baha'is were coming in to give them refugee status. So my parents and I were refugees. I was 13 years old at the time. We were refugees in Pakistan until our immigration status worked out and we moved to Canada. And so we all had to learn English. I did not speak a word of English. As I mentioned, our schooling was very much in and out of the school system. So I hadn't had a stable environment for learning since pretty much third grade when the revolution happened. And so I entered Canada and about to learn English in ninth grade. And so my journey began in Toronto. And then about a quarter century ago, 25 years ago, I got married and moved to Atlanta. And Atlanta has been our home ever since then. And so throughout living in the West and educating myself more and more about the teachings of the Baha'i faith, I feel more strongly as I get older about giving back and also what a responsibility we have to make sure that we implement these teachings of Baha'u'llah that promote peace and justice and equality in any place in the world that we reside, whether we are in a country that is so boldly persecuting its minorities like Iran or somewhere in the United States, that there is definitely disadvantages with certain community groups. And so that has been my life path. And so through this journey of raising a family and just living my life, I've never turned my eyes away from what my focus in life is, and which is the betterment of the world, and but betterment of the community around me in whatever way I can help. So that's a little background, Gail.
Yeah, thank you very much. I know, you know, I introduced you as an entrepreneur. You've had the fortune of being able to start a few businesses and just from the ground up and make it work. Could you go into a little bit of that?
Sure. So I actually very early on got involved with a lot of the school projects in my children's school, so PTA and Room Mom, and also many of the Baha'i activities in our community in suburbs of Atlanta. And so we started a wonderful World Religion Day in our community that we got the mayor of the city involved, and we invited all the churches and synagogues into our Baha'i Center. But also later on, I began a bakery and with my aunt, and that was very a wonderful experience and a learning process, because I didn't know anything about having a small brick and mortar kind of a business. So that lasted about 5 years until we transitioned. But that business was exciting. I met a lot of wonderful people in Atlanta through that business, and also learned how difficult it is for small businesses to make it when the rents are high and when the expenses are so high, and then having had employees that we had trained and then found out that they did not have legal statuses here, and losing those employees, and then being shorthanded, and what a burden it has become on the businesses to also go through that journey, but also the individuals that you really connect with, and then seeing them being deported. And that was very difficult for me to adjust to, actually, that whole process. But so the bakery was one of them. And then throughout all of these times, I have a fascination for real estate and a love for investment. And so we've actually invested in many properties, as well as became an angel investor in some startups. And most of the startups have been about education and having access, education apps for your phone that promote education, for especially for children that are not in the West, that can access these apps and be able to learn things and see things that otherwise would not be able to see or experience in the world around them, in the places that they are. So I've been involved with some startups as well as real estate. And so my current involvement is in the property that I have acquired since 2013, and trying to make it the best business venture I've ever started. So, which will lead us to our next segment.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get into talking about that property, because I definitely want to explore that and the working with the neighborhood, et cetera, we were talking about social action. So I want you to talk, well, I want us to talk about the definition of social action for a moment. And I know there's a Baha'i quote about that that can just lead us on the track here. So how would you define social action?
Sure. So if you Google social action, it's a project. Social action is defined as projects that are carried out by individuals or groups working together for the good of others, to be of social change, and also to come up with new, completely new solutions to old problems. The Baha'i's effort of social action is to seek to promote the social and material well-being of people of all walks of life, whatever their beliefs or backgrounds. Such efforts are motivated by the desire to serve humanity and to contribute to for constructive social change. And so that is the Baha'i perspective of social action. And as you mentioned, we do have a quote about what is social action from the Universal House of Justice as well. So do you want me to say the quote now, or should we wait?
Yeah,
do you want to talk about the history of the building?
Or you can summarize it, whichever. It's important, I think, to talk about, as you just said, it's really for the whole world, and it's to bring about betterment of the world, and really, make a better society. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so the Baha'i activity in the field of social and economic development seeks to promote the well-being of people of all walks of life, what are their beliefs or backgrounds. I think that's very important, because we're not going to a area where they are like-minded individuals or anything like that, It represents the efforts of the Baha'i community to affect constructive social change as it learns to apply the teachings of the faith, together with knowledge accumulated in the different fields of human endeavor, to social reality. Its purpose is neither to proclaim the cause nor to serve as a vehicle for conversion. And for me, that is the most important part, is that the efforts that the Baha'is undertake all around the world, there is just one purpose, and that is for the betterment of the world, and absolutely with no alternative motive of conversion or a vehicle to change others' religious beliefs in a way that we are normally used to seeing in the past.
Exactly, which I think is so important because really, truly, that's what I what strikes me about the writings of the Baha'i Faith. It really is how to create a more peaceful and just world, and a world where everyone is considered to be, where everyone is equal, has equal opportunities to uplift themselves, to be a service of to society. Too many S's there, and to really bring about that unity through diversity. You know, honoring the diversity of the human culture, and that includes the diversity of religion and the diversity of our of cultures and languages and nation states. And so it's so important that we work together in this social action to just make it a better world for all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's another quotation that jumps out to me. It's, humanity's collective life suffers when any one group thinks of its own well-being in isolation from that of its neighbors or pursues economic gain without regard for how the natural environment, which provides substance for all, is affected. So,
yes.
I mean, we see that in every way, that it cannot just be in our own bubble. I think that if we're okay, then it doesn't matter what others are going through, that we're all linked together.
Yes, and I love that you brought in the natural environment again, because as a biologist and someone who works with animals, it's so important to me to bring that home, that we're talking about how can we work with Mother Earth, how can we work with the other species on the planet and not simply use them as property or resources to mine and farm, but to really be in synergy with the cycles of life, because Mother Nature is a reflection of the Creator and certainly knows how to be more successful at creating a unified world than many humans can do. So we can look to that as an example as well. Mm-hmm. So,
and I will actually share.
Go ahead.
I will later on share with you about a project that a junior youth group did with the marine life as an example of social action. So that's
right.
A great way. For us to talk about that too.
Okay. All right. So, so social action. All right. So we're talking about you as an entrepreneur, you as a person who is on the lookout for how she can work with the communities around you to create a better lifestyle for everyone. There is I want to go into a little bit about the Baha'i Center in Atlanta, because it's a nice model. Of course, we're talking a lot about the Baha'i Faith here today. This really can apply to any location where community people gather and can come together in unity and harmony and working together to create whatever needs to be done for that for community. I know the Baha'i Center in downtown Atlanta is an historical building and really very important building, because it was one of the first places where blacks and whites could meet when it was illegal for people to meet of different races, colors, back in the 1950s. And so let's talk about that a little bit. I know you had some more on the history of the center that we wanted to talk about. And, of course, I also want to mention it's right around the corner from the Martin Luther King Jr. Center and Historical District here in Atlanta, Georgia. So go for it.
This Baha'i Center, I just really, when we moved to the city limits of Atlanta, is our Baha'i community changed. And once we started to attend their activities in the Baha'i Center, I started learning more and more about it. And I was just blown away and fascinated by the history of this center. It was built, in the 40s, an African-American, individuals were becoming Baha'is, but an African-American gentleman by the name Leroy Burns became a Baha'i. And it was during the segregation time and Jim Crow era. And so the Baha'i community, our main principle is unity of mankind and elimination of prejudice. So the Baha'i, black and white Baha'is were meeting together to worship together. And so the the Baha'is were subject to a lot of difficulties and, you know, cross burnings on their yards and all of that stuff that you know about in what happened in you know, during the Jim Crow era was happening. And so at one point the police said that we can no longer protect you guys. If you do choose to meet together, you should have your own place or meet in a public place. Well, after a few times meeting in libraries and hotels, they would find out that there are interracial meetings and they would stop them from meeting in that spot. So Mr. Burns had, he was a postman and had saved up some money to build a home for his wife. And one day he went to his wife and said, how do you feel about if we don't build a home for ourselves, but we build one for humanity? And so they purchased a small plot of land that was in an African-American area of the city, which happens to be right across the center from Martin Luther King Center, which is Ebenezer Church. But that's where all the prominent African-American community was, the lawyers and doctors, and it was just a thriving community. So he purchased that, and he built actually block by block. He made the cement blocks in his oven, carried them, and built that center. And so that was the first place where blacks and whites would get together and worship together without any trouble. And so when I learned that, I just my heart was melting. That just imagining myself to be in the 1950s, you're a postman, and you take your entire life savings. I mean, talk about belief. Talk about believing something and sacrificing all you have because you want to establish racial unity. And the area has gone through a lot of changes since the 50s. And so we noticed that a lot of that whole area is becoming, I guess, gentrified in a way. And so there was a block of buildings next to the Baha'i centers that have been abandoned for about 15 years. And so my husband and I acquired about them. And in 2013, we ended up purchasing those buildings because we noticed a trend was going towards a lot of bars and clubs and restaurants that were opening up on that street, and property value was going higher and higher. And for us, in order to keep the dignity of that block because of the center, and also to expand on the vision that Mr. Burns had, which is really a Baha'i vision of, you know, oneness, and to expand that and create a block that vision is prominent in the city of Atlanta. And so we purchased this large amount of property in 2013. And so ever since then, I have been doing research and a lot of thought and consultation towards trying to find out the best way to use this building. And the building is rather large. It's each floor is 6,000 square feet, and I believe we can build about three or four floors. So you're talking about 18 to 24,000 square feet of building. And so this is not a small task, and it is something that my husband and I are financing it. And we're not building a Baha'i center. We actually want to make a center for the community that the Baha'is as well can use, and so can all the other members of our community. But we wanted to see what's the best way of utilizing this. And I think after reading the compilation on social action and our responsibilities as the Baha'is in our communities and learning process in, like, all the other cities that I'm seeing, all these companies that are opening up, whether profit or nonprofit or for-profit, that they're taking this conscious level of business ethics, basically, to take care of their environment and their footprints and everything. I wanted to learn more about them, and I thought, gosh, wouldn't it be great if there was a central location where like-minded people can come and share their experiences and work together and learn from each other? And so the idea came of starting a co-working space, which is very much a trend right now.
It's a trend, yes.
Yep. They have it for if you're a startup or whether you're a B2B or B2C or female entrepreneurs. And it's an environment where you can have an office or a desk, but then there's activities and seminars that can elevate your learning from each other. And so the idea came that we should maybe consider turning this building into a co-working space where individuals that are interested in social action, companies, which means companies that are for-profit or non-profit, Baha'i or otherwise, but the mission of being mindful of A, B, C, D, E, F, G that will be listed on our mission statement for the business, you know, if they fit all of those categories, then that will be an environment for them to come and get a desk and get an office, and so we can all collaborate together and learn from each other's learnings and hopefully make Atlanta and the United States and the world have an impact in our on our own lives and lives of others.
Okay, so mentioned
that became
you just mentioned A, B, C, D, E, F, etc., the mission statement. And you may or may not have it all written, of course, or want to share it right at the moment. But could you give us one example of what qualification, if you will, would be a company would identify a company who is working in social action that would go on that mission statement?
Sure, sure. So, for example, the mission statement, a company that will qualify is they have to be consumers, conscious consumers, right? Like, for example, they have to have in some ways have some kind of a giving back to the community at large and not just their bottom line. And so unlike any other business where shareholders just want to see the profits and all of that, I think for us, for our building, for you to require an office space, I would like to see that as far as your business plan, how much of your business is giving back to the community that you're serving or you are giving service to or you're selling your products to. If you're in a fashion industry, are your clothing, sustainable? Are your clothing, come from fair trade or fair wages rather than, child labor, so these are the, so if you are a technology company, what are your specification and your privacy and how are you promoting a level of integrity that, that sometimes is lacking when a child is on a website or, you know what I mean? So
excellent.
All of that will be put into consideration. Yes.
So it sounds like as the more you go into it, there are many, many factors to consider when one wants to become a socially conscious company that would qualify for this this office space. So are you going to, have you considered having training for startups or for companies to come in and learn how they can be more socially conscious? Sounds like
that would be a great use of the space
to actually train companies
exactly.
If they want to be one.
So we are actually in talks to have a partnership with Impact Experience. And Impact Experience I don't know if they're a consulting group or an education group. You can, look them up online. It's www.impact-experience.com. And they fuel transformation in marginalized communities by building strategic relationship between investors, foundations, companies, and entrepreneurs and local leaders they seek to support. So that's their mission statement. So I'm actually having a meeting with them end of the month to see what will be our first step moving forward. And I think it is very important that we have to know that social action, something that works, let's say, in Detroit or in, Florida or Mississippi, may not be that it works here or the needs of our community. So it is very important that within the area that my building is, we evaluate the needs of our own community, and we speak to the leaders, our city officials, our community, our neighbors, and the investors and the companies that want to come in and invest and find out the real need of our community. And so using impact experience, they will come in and they will assist me in having these trainings with the community.
Excellent.
And getting together and first and foremost finding out what are the needs of our community.
Right.
And then from then on, there will always be educational process.
Yeah. Perfect. I mean, that makes total sense. And I was going to get into that as well. So thank you for, you know, each site is specific. Each location, each city, et cetera, is really specific about what it needs. And I know that this area of Atlanta is a very, as you said, up-and-coming area. It's gone through so much historical change, and so a lot of there's still a lot of small businesses, a lot of community, you know, churches and community centers, and so it's about working together and coming up with what needs from the community. Have you already have a list, sort of what the community does want? I mean, it sounds like this would be a great opportunity for any new companies or any individuals who wanted to put their business there to be in your mm-hmm. building. Has there been some other needs from the community that have been expressed that maybe this could address as well?
Yeah, definitely. And I think I have to mention that the building is quite large, you know. So we have not made the determination that whether we want to use the entire building as a co-sharing, you know, office space, right?
Right.
So it might be just two floors or one floor. But definitely the downstairs, which the streetcar passes and a lot of pedestrians, can be used as a center, some sort of a gathering center or education center or after-school programs, or we can house a nonprofit that is will be super beneficial to the needs of the community, whether it's towards supporting the artists in the area or towards child care, after-school child care, or junior youth empowerment programs where, you know, we can use the community. We have so many young people that are interested in being of service and having a positive impact and having positive role models in the community. And so maybe we can provide such services to them. So all of those are just in the drawing board right now, and we're trying to figure out the best way to utilize that first floor, which is 6,000 square feet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Do you have a timeline of when you and Impact Experience are going to be kind of settled into the uses of the building and announcing that to the community to then start to build and put it into practice?
So to be honest with you, since 2013, so many ideas have gone through the our board, vision board per se, to what to do with this community. And in reality, I am in no hurry other than just really being praying about it. So I'm prayerful, I am mindful, and I'm conscious of our surroundings. And I'm open to, really, I am open for any kind of energy or inspiration to move me, to talk to me, to see what it is. Because my intention for this building is truly not for profit or the bottom line. And so I am conscious of, I want to make the best that it can be to serve the people of City of Atlanta, right? And so there, I've never put any time limits on myself because I feel like that makes me rush it. And so when I came across to take this course on social action, that really moved me. And within a month, I met Jenna, which is, a partner of Impact Experience. And so she will be coming on the 29th of September to meet with me. So I think that finally, since 2013, this is the first time I can say that we're on a solid path and we're moving forward. And once the decisions are all made, then we have to go through an architect to draw the building. And then we have to go to the Urban Design Commission and the City of Atlanta and the, you know, all of that. So the whole permitting process might take about a year to 18 months, and then the building process will happen. So we have a projection of 3 to 5 years
from
now to open. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, excellent. No, that's fantastic. It will definitely be a wonderful addition to this area of the city and to the local community and to all of Atlanta as well, I'm sure. You mentioned the junior youth groups and the youth, because it is so important to support the youth these days. And particularly, junior youth are the ages between like 11 and 15, and this is a time of really new beginnings and growth and individualization of these young people coming up into who are they and what's their service in the world. And so I know the Baha'i community has something called the Junior Youth Spiritual Empowerment Program, which works with this middle school age junior youth or kids, you know, from all communities and all religious beliefs and all walks of life. And just to, again, to promote unity and to give them those leadership skills and those sense of empowerment with their spiritual side of who they are and how they can serve humanity. So you had mentioned partly putting this building to use as an educational center, perhaps, for junior youth, but also that there was an example of a junior youth group working with the marine life that you wanted to share. So tell us about that.
Sure. So, you know, junior youth groups are all over the world, as well as every county in the United States. So you can find your local Baha'i community, find out where is the junior youth program happening, and they will guide you towards that. But the one that there was a case study that I just found absolutely amazing is from Tana in Nacajelo Marine Resource Protection Area. So I think the area is near Papua New Guinea and Australia and that area. And what happened was there's the people that lead the junior youth, it's not a teacher, it's called an animator. So there was an animators meeting to find out what is the best way to serve their community. And, you know, the junior youth program, they study the text and then they have service projects. And it has to be sustainable. So these are the requirements of a junior youth empowerment program. So service is mandatory to what they do. So after consulting with this individual in 2011, after consulting with his junior youth, they decided, they want to do gardening. And, you know, they go through all of these things. We want to do this. And they realize that none of it is really sustainable. So one of them mentioned that, you know, the corals in their island are all dying. They're all bleached and there's lack of fish. And so they decided to experiment, and they consulted and discussed with the community to see how they can help the marine life. And so as part of their process, and I'll go really quickly, they included consultation. So they met with the landowners and they told them that they have this idea and people cannot fish in that area or swim in that area. Just give them the block of land of their beach area. And so then they decided they want to talk to the chief of the village. And so one of the youth took the chief some, I guess there's a juice, like from a local root, and that represents like respect. So they went to the chief's house, excited, and drank the juice and said, "We will support you." And they didn't have any trouble going through this process, but they finally, through, you know, talking and consultation and permission, they got the permission from the chief and the landowners, and they put up signs and they spoke and they wrote to the local spiritual assembly to get their support for funding for some of the signs they needed to make. And they checked on it, and within like 30 days they realized, oh my God, there were some corals back. And within 60 days they saw, oh, there's some small fish. Within 90 days they had some crabs and some. So every day they would check on this, and things were growing. And so the other villagers came and said, we're interested in this. And so this process of learning, and then they had to educate the entire village of, I guess it's their tradition to put poison in their fishing rod or something to go fishing. So they were telling them that they can't do that. That's not good for the coral. And they, you know, a lot of the elders were very upset, and they said, this is our tradition. And why do you do that? And so they, in the town hall meeting, they put the junior youth in a lot of uncomfortable situation that they had to respond. And one of the junior youth finally said, we don't have the answers. Yes, we do it. We did it. But now we realize we're not helping our environment, so we need to change our ways. Just because my parents did it and you did it doesn't make it right. So we have to change our ways. So with much hardship, they stopped that use of poison on their whatever they were using to go fishing. And so that whole area, just within a year and a half, completely changed. The coral was back. And there was a time when people could not even fish in their own ocean anymore. And they were eating sardine cans that were imported to them. And, you know, tunas and canned fish. So it became so vibrant that now the community, there was a lot of fish. So they learned that if they catch a crab or, you know, a clam, and they don't eat it within 2 days, they would release it back to the ocean so it doesn't go bad, until they're ready to eat it again. And so the ocean and the marine life became very vibrant again. And it got to a point that when mothers would go, not only they were able to fish like two or three for their own meals, but also they had two or three extra that they would go and sell on the market. But everybody, through this process of 2011 of these junior youth, an entire island has changed its ways of fishing and taking care of their marine life. And so now they have partnered up with the fishery department of, marine life and fishery, and they go and they have seminars. One other village said, we don't need your help. The chief said, we don't need your help. We're going to do it on our own. But this process took consultation, fundraising, collaboration, education. It wasn't just one command from a chief saying, now we're going to do this, right? People had to take ownership of this. And so the chief said, we don't need you. We're going to do this on our own. And within a month, he came back to the junior youth and said, can you help us? Nobody's listening to me.
And particularly when you allow the young people to speak, they have such a voice, even though the elders may think, I know more than you, and yes, they have more life experience, but the youth, when you give them the power to make the change, oh my goodness, and certainly the other youth will listen to them and just do things differently, which is fantastic.
Yeah. So by the end of 2013, I'm just going to read one small paragraph. Says, this project has also contributed to unifying the village. For example, we had to hold two awareness meetings in one of the villages, as the village would not come together in one place due to disunity. Now the program has helped in unifying the community, as they realize that the project will not be successful if they do not unite. They realize it is impossible to be divided while having one project. So now they have no choice, and they all come together, and we have one meeting.
Wow, that's progress. That's amazing progress.
Yeah, so from 2011 to 2013, these junior youth group managed to change the marine life, unify a few villages, and change the habits, and raise a new generation that is conscious and aware of their environment.
And also raise a new generation that has the skills to make these changes, because they had to learn themselves and dig deep within themselves to find those skills to be able to reach out to all the different walks of life within their community, from the top leaders to the grassroots, and create that unity. So they now have those skills they can take into different areas of their own life. And who knows where that will lead, which will be fantastic, I'm sure. So, Marjan, we're getting close to the end of our time together on the show. it's been a delight to have you and to talk about social action. So how would you wrap this up with our listeners?
May I wrap it up with a quotation from the Universal House of Justice?
Yes, of course.
Because for me, I get my inspiration and my ideas from the writings. And so I would like to say, material civilization is like a lamp glass. Divine civilization is the lamp itself, and the glass without the light is dark. Material civilization is like the body. No matter how infinitely graceful, elegant, and beautiful it may be, it is dead. Divine civilization is like the spirit, and the body gets its life from the spirit. Otherwise, it becomes a corpse. It's thus been made evident that the world of mankind is in need of breath of the Holy Spirit. Without the Spirit, the world of mankind is lifeless. And without the light, the world of mankind is in utter darkness.
Mm. That's beautiful. So to wrap it up, the social action we're talking about really is bringing in that spirit of you know, the creator of unity, of who we are as divine beings, and infusing it into our actions and into our community. And as you've pointed out by your examples, to really work with our neighbors and our families and our city governments and with those around us to come up with something that is beneficial to all, where we can unite and create that synergy and that harmony and really bring our neighborhoods and our cities into a place of peace and justice. Wow. So I guess we're encouraging people to go out and look in their own communities and see how they can also be social actors and do their part in creating unity and peace in their own way. Correct?
Yeah, and if they are interested in reading up on the Baha'i perspective on social action, they can look online, Social Action Baha'i World Center, and this 17-page brochure comes up. So that's the guidance that I move forward with.
Excellent. Thank you, Marjan, for being on the Peace Brain Show.
Thank you for having me, Gail. Have a wonderful day.
You too. So I want to give out the website again also to a couple of websites, Baha'iTeachings.org, as we talked about at the beginning, with articles and videos. You can search for those topics and social action as well. You can also go to Baha'i.org and find out more about the teachings of the faith. I want to thank Marjan again for being on the show. So let's go into our Peace Brain meditation for the last few minutes we have here on the show. So I invite everyone to just settle in your chair, wherever you're listening, get comfortable, take a breath, and ground yourself, which means really taking awareness of the base of your spine, creating maybe a beam of light or a tree trunk coming out of the base of your spine, going all the way down through the floor, through the bedrock, and into the iron crystal core of Mother Earth. A grounding cord brings you into present moment and allows you to just release everything that you're worrying about, anxiety, the past, the future, and really be here and now. So take a breath and ground yourself, and I invite you to close your eyes if you choose. We are all divine beings, and I invite you also to create a beautiful beam of light going up to the sky, up into Father Sky, into this grid around the Earth, the planet Earth, this beautiful electric grid or Christed consciousness grid, Christed not of a man, but of a divine essence. And so you're tuning into that divinity and bringing down this beautiful breath of the Holy Spirit that was talked about. It's already within you. I invite you to really look at your sacred heart, to be in that middle of your being, your sacred heart, because this is where God resides in you. This is where your divine grace is, where the Holy Spirit resides. And think about who you are in this divine light. Yes, you're perhaps a mother or a wife or a father or a business owner, a leader, whatever your job title may be. You are all of those things, but you also are a divine being, a beautiful example of the temple, the casing for your spirit in that physical body and in this physical life. So all of the skills and talents you have acquired in your life, whether you are young or old in age, you have a service to contribute to the world. You have a beautiful wisdom and knowledge and experience. And those types of stirrings within your own heart, that is your confirmation from the Holy Spirit of how you can serve your community and humanity in general. So take a breath and think about your skills and who you are. The beauty, because no one else is like you. You are unique on the planet. And you are here for a purpose. And you too can take social action. It may be small. It may be grand. There is no judgment on the amount or the projects that you choose. Something small, just working with a neighbor, working with someone else's child to help them learn how to ride a bike, to talk with your neighbors of what your community might need and want, and see where it goes, because it blossoms from that first breath of consultation with others. When two or more are gathered, much can happen. So give yourself permission to be that breath of the Holy Spirit within you, to be the actor of social change, to bring about this beautiful new world of peace that we've been talking about, and unity, and much like the example of the junior youth, really create not only a change in the social network of your village, of your town, of your community, your city, your sphere of influence, but also impact in a beautiful way the natural world as well. So take a breath and be in that space, and then I invite you to open your eyes and write down what came to you, to then perhaps meditate on it, pray on it, and to think about your next steps for taking social action in the world. So thank you for tuning in to the Peace Brain Show today. I invite you to go forth and activate your Peace Brain and put your Peace Park on the World Peace Trails map. And you can find out more about that if you go to my website, tourismforpeace.com. And you can go to also our website about the World Peace Trails at worldpeacetrails.com. Or you can email me, Gail Lash, at hello@peacebrain.org. So again, thank you for tuning in, and have a beautiful day. Namaste. Many blessings.
Thank you for joining us on the Peace Brain Show. You can find us at tourismforpeace.com. Be sure to check out Dr. Gail's Akashic Records readings, her peace master plans for your business or organization, and her book, #OptForPeace, 9 Essential Steps to Achieving Peace, Power, and Prosperity. Tune in to BBS Radio, Station 1, every other Wednesday at 6 p.m. Pacific and 9 p.m. Eastern to the Peace Brain Show for your installment of wonder, inspiration, and practical peace.